This is Yusuf.
And this is InFly Entertainment.
Yeah, so we had a throwback of our API month of movies.
This is the Thursday before Memorial Day weekend, so it felt good to do a movie that not only honors the Asian American Pacific Islander heritage, but also looks at our Navy for Memorial Day.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, shout out to my dad, who's a naval man. we're reviewing the 1970 epic Tora.
Yes. So it was released in 1970. What was going on when this movie came out?
All right. So on our 4x3 box tubes of television, so 5 to 1, what were we watching? Well, we were watching number 5, Gunsmoke. You know, we were still doing the Western stuff on TV. Ironside, number 4. Here's Lucy was number 3. Was that the Lucille Ball kind of spinoff or like show thingy? I don't know. I need to look into that one.
No idea.
Number 2, The Flip Wilson Show. Ha! I was watching some old Flip Wilson episodes. He was hilarious. And number 1 was Marcus Wimberly, M.D. And what people were listening to on the vinyl, on the record players, or 8-track. Well, when did 8-track come on the scene?
Oh, I have no idea.
Okay, yeah. Well, vinyl, 8-track, whatever you were, where you were listening to. It was Ain't No Mountain High Enough. This was the newly solo Diana Ross. And I think at this point, she broke off from the Supremes and was doing her own thing. And that's what we were listening to in 1970, or September 1970.
Okay, so Tora is the story of the 1941 Japanese air raid on Pearl Harbor and the series of preceding American blunders that aggravated its effectiveness. So for those of you that don't know, Pearl Harbor was bombed December 7th, 1941. And although the U.S. was sort of helping the Allied forces in Europe, they weren't 100% into either the Pacific War or the European war against the Nazis. And so this movie takes a look at basically it's like the year before December 7th, 1941. And the movie starts out with, the movie is actually unique in that the English sequences were filmed by Richard Fleischer, an American director, and then the Japanese sequences that follow all of the generals in Japan that were planning for the battle and the ambassador were filmed by a Japanese director.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is kind of like the first time it's ever happened. Maybe not, but it's very, like Jenna said, it's a very unique production, like having two directors, you know, filming the two sides of the conflict, so to speak, which gave it a lot of like validity, especially with, you know, the scenes, the American scenes and like the Japanese scenes, when you see the Japanese, you know, kind of like the politics of on their end on executing an attack and kind of like the politics on like American end and kind of like how they were talking, you know, about the prep or potential attack or should we ignore it? Should we, you know, give it some cadence or, you know, things like that, deciphering codes and things of that nature. So, yeah, it was, like General said, it was very unique film.
Yeah, I think by having the two different directors, you don't have the Japanese scenes being Americanized and being portrayed or directed by American director, and thereby influencing how that their story is told. Apparently, when this movie was screened, went to Pearl Harbor survivors, both on the American side and Japanese side, they said that this is the closest that they've seen of actually portraying what really happened.
Yeah, definitely. I will encourage people to watch Tora, Tora, Tora before you even consider flipping on Michael Bay's Pearl Harbor.
Oh my God.
Oh goodness.
That wow. Pearl Harbor is such a crappy movie. Just don't even, I mean, the cinematography is really pretty in that movie, but you don't need to watch it.
No, not at all. Don't do it. Like, yeah, I mean, if you want like a soap opera's dramatization / bastardized version of the movie, you know, of the tag, yeah, watch it. But if you want to watch something that's very grounded and very authentic, far as really conveying the thoughts and the conversations between these, you know, between these two sides. Yes. I mean, it's funny. I think this is the first time I actually watched this movie all the way through. Because I mean, this movie used to be on TMC, like Turner Classic Movies, stuff like that. I remember I would just kind of drop in on certain scenes, things like that. But I never sat down and watched it from credit to credit. And yeah, and I was really taken aback by, like Jenna was saying, like how authentic, you know, the conversations, you know, between these generals, and kind of like how it was toggling between, you know, these two sides, and like how they were, you know, strategizing and things like that. I was like, wow, like it didn't seem one side. I think that's what really like struck me about this movie. It wasn't like a one-sided point of view. It was just like, okay, these are how these two sides were going about their strategic plans on this thing.
Yeah, so on the Japanese side, the movie actually starts in September of 1940 when Japan signs the treaty with Germany to become part of the Axis, Allied Axis of Evil, so to say. Mm-hmm. And then it follows the Japanese through the next year leading up to December 7th. And basically what's happening on their side is you have the Navy that believes that the future of the war is going to be in airplanes. And the powers that be back in Japan are like, no, 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 it's all about the ships. And so there's all this, like, I want to say infighting, but it's not really infighting because that's not the culture of Japanese hierarchies. It's, we don't agree with what the powers that be are doing, but we're going to make recommendations and hope that they listen to us. Mm-hmm. And that's how they came up with a plan ultimately to send airplane carriers to Hawaii and use airplanes to attack Pearl Harbor, and use their ships, because the U.S. generals believed that ships were where it was at also for Japan. And so the U.S. generals were following the naval ships that were headed towards the Philippines, basically, and not really thinking about Hawaii all that much. So the Japanese, even though the man on the ground thought it was all about the planes, the generals did think it was about the ships. Ultimately, the man on the ground convinced them of their strategy of using planes to attack Pearl Harbor. While all of that was going on, you also had the ambassador of Japan in Washington trying to come up with like a peace deal with the U.S. Mm-hmm. And the powers that be in Japan were like, yeah, but you guys have moved to Hawaii. You moved all of your naval forces from San Diego to Hawaii. You're coming for us. Like, you need to back off and go back to San Diego, or we're going to take this as an aggressive move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And this is is that kind of a classic thing, the like breakdown of communication, right? Yeah. And like the irony of it all was like the attack happened when Japan and the U.S. was technically like at peace.
Mm-hmm. Right. So the Geneva Accord says that you have to declare war before going into battle. And so Japan was like, we're meeting with the Japanese ambassadors, meeting with the U.S. ambassador at 1 o'clock on December 7th. And at that point in time, we will tell them that we're going to war. But that meeting was delayed because of communication problems. Mm-hmm. And so Japan ends up attacking Pearl Harbor at 1 o'clock, but the U.S. doesn't get the note from the ambassador until like 2 o'clock.
Yeah. I was like, wow.
Breaking the Geneva Accord.
It's like, to talk about, I mean, if you were to look up irony in a dictionary, it would be like this attack. Wow. And so the attack happened. It's very interesting. I brought up the Michael Bay Pearl Harbor, you know, how like big of a spectacle the attack sequence was. You know, you got the CG ships being blown up and the planes zipping through the sky and, you know, shooting down planes, like blowing up grounded planes and hangars, stuff like that. Here in the 70s, you have miniatures. So, you know, there's like, you know, miniatures being blown up and miniature ships being blown up to, you know, give the illusion that these are actual ships being attacked. And the crazy thing is, like, I prefer this attack, like, sequence more than a Pearl Harbor attack.
I would have to say that even though I think there's two or three times I could tell that they were miniatures, but for the most part, you can't tell that they're miniatures. And there were some scenes where there were airplanes being blown up that weren't actually miniatures.
Right.
They had life-size replicas of the planes on the ground in Pearl Harbor that they're actually blowing up. So,
right. They're like hollowed out planes. Some of them were
remote-controlled.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's so funny, like, old movie magic, like, still holds up, you know, in comparison to, like, the CG-heavy stuff that you see for some reason. Because then, like, back then, you had, like, carpenters, you had models, you had painters, you had sculptors, like, really replicating, you know, details of these ships and tanks and planes and things like that. When you see them being blown up, like you buy into the illusion that these are actual life-size, you know, ships and stuff being blown up, you know, so, yeah.
Yeah. So the things that were going wrong on the U.S. side was they did have the Japanese embassy tap, like a wiretap there. So they were hearing what messages Japan was sending to the embassy, and they were decoding it. But the messages that they were decoding were going to all the wrong people. And so ultimately, like, the folks in Pearl Harbor that should have been notified on the morning of December 7th, that they believed Japan was going to be attacking, didn't get the note.
They didn't get the memo.
Yeah, they didn't get the memo because the lines were down. It showed up like an hour or two after the attack. had started. And then they also had put a radar on top of one of the mountains. And the guys that were watching the radar called it in saying, hey, there's something weird on the radar. It looks like there's a bunch of planes. And the person they called was like, we're expecting some planes and it's nothing to worry about. Mm-hmm. December 7th was a Sunday. So everyone was like off. They'd been out drinking the night before. They weren't really like prepared or ready or thinking that Japan would be able to make it all the way across the Pacific and attack Pearl Harbor.
Yeah. Little did they know. Yeah, it is. And actually, there is a funny sequence. Like when they actually come in, you see the planes. There's a flight training plane. That's kind of
yeah. So that happened in real life.
Yeah. Wow.
a woman was, and it in real life, it really was a woman. She had a flight school and was teaching. A man how to fly one of the old school, like Wright Brothers planes, the double wing things. And I think she was like in her early 20s or something and ended up being chased by a couple of the airplanes and made it back safely.
Oh, really? I know they chased her.
Yeah, they didn't show that in the movie, but, you know, I had to go.
Exactly. Yeah, it was really easy to go down that rabbit hole of information on A Force. Yeah, because in the movie, she's like, oh, I'm out. And she like does a bow face and like bounce, and the planes are still charting their course. The attack sequence was like, you know, amazingly executed on film. Very, you know, suspenseful and carnage and explosions. And they did a great job. You know, replicating the attack, especially in 1970, like movies. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this was the first film done on Fiji film, Technicolor type of thing. So you can watch it on YouTube right now for free. And it's like the colors and the quality of the film is still really great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very crisp. Was the film kind of ends with Yamamoto? And actually, like that last like saying, whatever, like
they awoke the sleeping monster.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, okay. I got it. Yeah. It said, I fear all we have done is to awaken a sleeping giant and fill him with terrible resolve. I mean, that's such a profound statement.
repeats. Apparently, that general didn't really say that in real life, but he did write in his memoirs, mm-hmm. his diary, that something similar to that. It was amped up a little bit for the movie by the writers, but it had the same essence.
Yeah. No. I mean, it's such a perfect statement to end the movie on, because we know what happens after. You know, the Pearl Harbor attack.
Roger Ebert gave this film 1 star, calling it one of the deadest, dullest blockbusters ever made.
Roger. Yeah, I don't know. I think Roger must have had a bad day that day. Well, he got struck. Maybe he got stuck in traffic on Lakeshore Drive and got pissed off that day. I don't know.
Yeah, the movie is actually pretty long. It's like 2.5 hours long.
Hey, hold on. Now, this movie is as long as Army of the Dead.
But Creed, also, there's plenty of Marvel films that are longer than this.
Exactly.
But at least on the version I watched, which I found fascinating, was that there was an intermission halfway through.
Yeah.
And I feel like the first half of the movie was very slow. I understand, like, there's a lot of setup in the movie. It feels like a slow build spy movie. And then it had the intermission. And then I feel like it was 30 minutes of nonstop battle at the end.
Yes.
Which was kind of awesome. So, I mean, I disagree with Roger Ebert, but I hear what he's saying.
Right. Yeah, I mean, may it rest in peace. I mean, yeah, I definitely disagree with him on this. But, I mean, in retrospect, I wonder if he was still alive, if he, like, revisited, if he went back, you know, to watch this again after watching Pearl Harbor, if he would have changed his tune about Tora, Tora, Tora. He probably would have.
It didn't do very well at the box office here in the States. But it did win an Oscar for Best Visual Effects.
All right. Yeah, it deserved it, especially for 1970.
And then it was nominated for Best Cinematography, Best Art Direction, Best Sound, and Best Film Editing, which I get all of those things.
Yeah, all the technical stuff, yes. They needed it all. Yeah, well, I guess this will segue into our Stuck on the Tarmac review.
Sitting on Your Sofa, definitely worth finding it on the YouTube. You'd rather do something else, like clean the house, do the dishes, or go outside and take on the masses.
Yeah. I mean, considering, you know, the Michael Bay one, but it's like, hey, watch this one instead of Pearl Harbor. Like, do yourself a service, because to me, I think this is like, I'm so glad you brought this up, Jay. It was like, because it was directed by, you know, American and Japanese, like, to like uniquely portray the two sides, it felt very authentic, you know, and I definitely respect this film for that. Actually trying to tell this story of the conflict in a genuine, authentic way. And plus, you know, we're closing in on Memorial Day weekend. I definitely suggest this movie. Definitely. If you haven't seen it, watch it.
Yeah, I feel like, if it's definitely Sit on the Sofa for me. I feel like it could be a family movie. It's not overly violent. There is 30 minutes of war, but you don't see blood. You see things exploding.
Exactly.
I think the hardest part will be the kids trying to read the subtitles. But it is, if you have kids that are into strategy, it's a great movie to learn strategy.
True. Yeah, that's true. Good point. Yeah, so there you have it, guys. Tora, Tora, Tora. Definitely check it out. Thank you. So it's on YouTube. You can watch it free.
Yes.
So definitely check it out. If you haven't seen it, watch it. You know, it's definitely a good film to watch if you kind of know of the Pearl Harbor thing, but if you wanted more of a dramatic layout in movie form, this is definitely a movie to watch. On top of do your research and actually read what actually happened, because it's definitely a lot more, you know, to dive into with the conflict on top of this, you know, this synthesized movie. So we will see you guys next week. Until then, wish everyone safe physical distancing again.
Get your vaccines and keep wearing those masks.
Yes. Thank you.
We'll be right back.